maids have been resting for about 10 minutes. In the meantime, I would have...
Hi, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Because I can't hear you.
I can hear you. I was
okay, great.
I was not talking, so you did not hear anything.
Okay, good. thanks for doing this. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me.
Pleasure. So for right now, I'm going to cut this all out for the actual recording. We already have a couple people that are on the call I see here, so hopefully they ignore our chatter. But as far as like sharing materials, are you planning to do a share screen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Got it all ready.
Perfect. So you're good for about 10 minutes, and then at 4:30, I'll introduce you, and you can feel free to take it away. We'll do about 35 minutes of your presentation, unless you have significantly more, significantly less, and then we'll do Q&A at the end for about 10 minutes, which I'll moderate.
Okay. I guess we'll figure out. I could probably go for longer than 35, but could cut it out. So we'll play it by ear.
Sounds good. And yeah, like I said, if we get some like really significant questions that come through during the presentation, do you mind if I cut you off to ask the question, or would you prefer to wait till
sure,
the end?
No, okay. Fine with me.
Okay. So, yeah, you've got about 10 minutes. So if you just want to mute your microphone and do whatever you need to do for the next couple of minutes, that's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if you need anything, just holler.
Do you mind if I stream on Facebook, or should I not?
No, by all means.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you.
Rabbi Shiffman, whenever you're ready, we can get started.
Hi, everyone. Just going to share my screen. Okay, I'm ready to go.
All yours.
Thank you. Okay, so welcome everyone. We are going to learn a little bit about growth, goals, and grit, religious and psychological strategies for flourishing during challenging times. My name is Mordechai Shiffman. I'm a clinical assistant professor at the Azrieli Graduate School of Jewish Education and Administration. And the goal for today is to learn about these three concepts, how they relate to each other, and how they can perhaps help us during what is no doubt a challenging time for all of us. So we're going to start off by first congratulating everybody for coming, in the sense that we're at a time where when we're presented with a challenge, we can basically just give up, we can throw in the towel, and we can turn our heads and brains off from learning, but instead we're choosing to learn more, to advance our knowledge. And that's a very powerful thing, to become a lifelong learner. As we state here in Pirkei Avos, Ben Zome Omer, Ezu Chacham Halomed Mikol Adam, who is wise? He who learns from everyone. And the Medrash Shmuel, Rav Shmuel du Zida, presents in two different places what is perhaps a well-known thought, but it's very powerful and worth repeating. So he says here, commenting on this Mishnah, Uma matok medrash ma shematzinu b'divrei razal, shemachnes es hachachamim b'shem talmidei chachamim. So we all know that sages are called talmidei chachamim. Why the word talmidei, students? Why not just call them chachamim, sages? So the second line, the hodianu ha'inyan ha'nifla hazeh ki mi'olam lo yitztak sheyikra shem chacham levad mibli sheyitztaref elav shem talmid. There is no such thing as a wise person unless they also consider themselves a student. Ki im eino choshev shu talmid eino chacham. If we do not consider ourselves students, lifelong learners, then we are not wise. Ki e efshar lahafrid shem chacham mishem talmid. We cannot separate the concept of being wise from that of being a student. And that is alluded to in Ezu Chacham halomed mikol adam, because we're lomed, we're actively learning, we're actively looking to learn from everyone and everything and every situation that we are put into. We're lifelong learners. Then he says it again in the sixth parak, and it's worth saying this one specifically because the way he presents it adds a little element of grit here. Ha'echad belimud, kolomar, biyoso lomid la'olam. What does it mean that you learn? You learn forever. Ki ezu chacham halomen mikol adam. References the same Mishnah. U'la'olam machshavis atzmo shu chaser v'choshek la'olam lomod. We always look at ourselves like we're lacking, like we're incomplete. There's always something to learn. Lilmod yoser, ze yasig malas haTorah. That's how we acquire Torah. Lefish la'olam hutzame l'mayim, because we're always thirsty for more. We always want to quench our thirst for knowledge. So all of us here today are trying to learn. We're trying to grow. We're trying to adapt to a situation and a challenge that perhaps we have never seen or faced before. We are becoming lifelong learners. And this leads us into our starting point. When I think of that Medrash Shmuel, I think of Carol Dweck's research on mindsets. Carol Dweck is a psychologist out in Stanford, has a book here you see on the left-hand side, Mindset, the New Psychology of Success, where the basic overview is that she has conducted lots of research on what she categorizes two different types of people who have a growth mindset versus people who have a fixed mindset. And broadly speaking, people who have a growth mindset when it comes to either intelligence or our abilities or our talents or our personality, we think that we can change. We don't just take what we have and say, that's how I was born, that's who I am, and I am not adaptable. Rather, I can grow. There's always something to learn. There's always something to improve on. versus somebody who has a fixed mindset, thinks that all of these things, our intelligence, our ability, our talents, our personalities, the way I am just is. And that's who I am. And there's nothing I can do about it. And there's nothing I can change. And this is the antithesis of being a Talmid Chacham, to be a lifelong learner, to be somebody who always wants to grow and always looks to learn from everybody. And those who have a growth mindset just do better in life. They do better in school. They do better at work versus a fixed mindset. We don't succeed as much. Our relationships aren't as great. The concept of a growth mindset is essential for us to be lifelong learners, to be a Lomed Mikol Adam, and a Talmid Chacham, somebody who's always going to learn. Now, there's a lot on this slide, but I love the colors here, and we're not going to focus on everything. Part of being a lifelong learner is being able to focus on what we have and then going and learning out the rest on our own. So all of these slides will be accessible to anybody who's here listening or watching, so you can look at all of the things that differentiate somebody between who has a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset. But we're going to focus on four, which is going to plant the seeds for the continual conversation as we move on from growth to grit, as well as to goals. And that is, if you look on the right-hand side, is all the qualities of the growth mindset, and the left-hand side, all the qualities of the fixed mindset. We're going to just focus on four for right now. People who have a growth mindset view challenges as opportunities. In contrast, people who have a fixed mindset avoid challenges altogether. They just don't want to deal with it. People who have a growth mindset acknowledge weaknesses. They embrace weaknesses. But people who have a fixed mindset shy away from things that they don't know. All the way on the bottom, people who have a growth mindset, where it's orange circled, understand failure as an opportunity to grow. And in contrast, somebody who has a fixed mindset, bottom left, understands failure as the limit of ability. Somebody who has a growth mindset persists in the face of setbacks, and somebody who has a fixed mindset gives up easily. So in the big picture, what you see, at least of what we're highlighting for now in terms of what a growth mindset all about. Growth mindset is not just about knowing that I can learn. There's a focus about knowing that you can learn and you can grow, specifically in cases that are challenging, when we fail, when there's setbacks, when things don't go the way we want them to go, when life throws us curveballs that we weren't expecting. People who have a growth mindset look to try to embrace and conquer those challenges. People with a fixed mindset just give up. They don't try. So there's no question that now that we are all facing a tremendous challenge in our lives, the importance of having a growth mindset, it's just essential, because otherwise we're just going to throw in the towel. There's so many, and everybody here has their own challenges as how this coronavirus is affecting them specifically. But to each person has their own challenge. If when the challenge hits, we just say, I can't do anything about it, and I'm stuck, and I just want to give up, that's not necessarily the growth mindset. Now, we can't change everything, and there are some things we do have to accept as just being reality, but if we just throw in the towel and don't think about how we can grow, then there's something missing from the experience. And this leads us into the concept of grit. So grit is a construct developed by Angela Duckworth, a psychologist in the University of Pennsylvania. The definition of grit on the bottom of the PowerPoint: a personality trait characterized by perseverance and passion for achieving long-term goals. Okay, so I'm going to break this down slowly, in the sense that what's essential for grit is to have long-term goals. If you don't have long-term goals, grit is irrelevant. Perseverance and passion don't mean anything unless they are tied towards a long-term goal. So we need a long-term goal. And then once I establish that long-term goal, to be gritty means to persevere and to have a passion towards trying to reach that long-term goal. She continues with the definition: Grit entails working strenuously to overcome challenges and maintaining effort and interest over time, despite failures, adversities, and plateaus in progress. Part of grit definitionally is that there is going to be a struggle. If we have a long-term goal, long-term goals don't just happen. Long-term goals are not easy to accomplish and easy to succeed at. Long-term goals require us to persevere. They require us that when we inevitably fail, when we inevitably have adversity towards that goal, that we persevere, we adapt, and we try to continue to work towards those goals because they are so important for us. So grit is another one of these essential character traits that has been shown to be directly related to how well people succeed in their academic careers, as well as at work, in the army. So lots of fascinating research. I encourage anybody who's interested to go just do a YouTube search and watch some of Angela Duckworth's videos or TED Talks. Very powerful. Same thing goes with Carol Dweck, to read up on all the different elements of both mindset and grit. But for our purposes, if you think about grit, and Duckworth has a beautiful piece what she did for Amazon, where she talks about this pyramid of goals and goal hierarchies, and this all can be found in her book as well, that when we talk about goals, I think this is really important for all of us now and how we've adapted over the past few weeks towards the new reality that we live in. When it comes to goals, there's a goal hierarchy in the sense that what we have at the top of our goal hierarchy, hopefully, is an ultimate concern. And that's the goal that we're tenacious about, we're stubborn about, we're aligned to. It's our topmost concern in life, is that top goal. Now, some of us don't think about this, and some of us might not be aware of what our top goal is, and we might be driven without even being conscious of it. And some of us might not have that top goal at all. And the argument is that that's not that great, because it's going to be hard to be gritty towards something if we don't have almost like a mission statement as to where we want to go with, how do we define our life? What's our purpose in our life? Now, that top goal then helps we then go and branch out to more mid-level goals. And those mid-level goals branch out to lower-level goals. So at the top, you have your ultimate concern, you have your mid-level goals, and you have your lower-level goals. Now, these goals, again, are related to grit, because grit is a passion and perseverance towards a long-term goal. So we need to be able to develop those goals, which we'll speak about shortly. But I want to focus here on that top ultimate concern. What's that ultimate goal? So if you think about it from a religious perspective, we might all have our own individual goals, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But if you think about it from a religious perspective, what's our ultimate goal? What's our ultimate concern? And I would argue, based on this Mishnah in Perkei Avos, the Rambam talks about this as well. The purpose, our ultimate goal, is that everything we do should be for the sake of heaven. Rabbeinu Yonah here elaborates, and he says that all of our care, everything we do, not just the mitzvos and the averos, that obviously is within the religious realm and the religious domain, but even the dvarim shel rishus, the permissible things like eating and drinking and just relaxing and getting up and sleeping, all of those things that we don't necessarily consider as quote-unquote religious are within the domain of being L'shem Shemayim. They should be L'shem Shemayim. As he sums up at the end here, Klalo shel davar, chayav adam lasum einav v'libo al drachav v'lishkol eskol ma'asav b'moznei seichel. Everything we do should be thought out. We should think about our actions before we perform them. And if we see something that's going to bring us towards God, we should do it. And if not, we shouldn't do this. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, the top of the goal hierarchy is everything should be for the sake of God. End of story. That's the ultimate goal. If there are things underneath that do not flow through and towards that goal, then we shouldn't be doing it. We'll skip the Me'iri now on the bottom. Perhaps we'll get back to it later if we have time. But what I want to reflect upon, if we go back a previous slide, is that if you look at the ultimate concern as being everything should be L'shem Shemayim, something that Duckworth talks about is that mid-level goals and low-level goals, the second and third tier in the hierarchy, sometimes get switched out. sometimes we think that we are, our mid-level goal is the way to get to our ultimate concern, is the way to get to our ultimate goal. But we hit a curveball. Something changes. The world changes. Things just go differently. If we stay too rigidly towards our what we would call mid-level or lower level goals, and we're not able to adapt and be flexible to get to that ultimate concern, then we sometimes might mess ourselves over. It's important to reflect and change mid and low level goals in order that we are adaptable towards that ultimate concern when it's appropriate. And I think that this, a good example of this is what we all experienced in terms of davening with a minion, as it were, or many of us experienced in terms of davening with a minion, and for each one, their own religious changes that came about because of the coronavirus. And that is, if we stick too rigidly to davening with a minion as being our, if we mistake that for the ultimate concern, the top of our goal, then we might make a mistake in terms of where we should be davening right now. If our ultimate concern is, what does God want from me? And the answer to that isn't davening with a minion now, but rather it's davening in my house, or it isn't going to do active work outside because of whatever mitzvah that would have brought me to, now I have to stay in my house. My mid-level and lower-level goals have to be adaptable. But the ultimate concern, that chol maaseh yehu l'shem shamayim, is the same. Everything we're doing is for the sake of God. But I want to reflect on another moment in terms of goals, is that what we're talking about until now is, Duckworth wouldn't say, would be for everybody. Meaning Angela Duckworth is talking about an ultimate concern is an individual ultimate concern. Everybody has different goals, as it were. And what we're presenting here in terms of this religious goal is that that's a goal for everybody. How does this relate to individuals? How does this relate to me and you? Is it that we all automatically have the same goals? So I would argue not. And one way to look at this is in this slide that's in front of us, is to talk about what I think is another representation in Pirkei Avos of mid-level goals. So the ultimate concern, I would argue, is everything should be for the sake of God, for the sake of heaven. I think the mid-level concerns can be framed within the famous Mishnah, Perek Aleph Mishnah Beis. Shimon HaTzadik said that the world stands on three things, three pillars: Torah, Avoda, and Gemilus Chasadim. To me, these are the paradigms of our mid-level goals. These things are what we see in terms of branching out, that everything flows from these mid-level goals up to the ultimate concern that everything should be L'Shem Shamayim. And then these three goals of Torah, Avodah, Gemilus Chasadim then can branch out and create more opportunities for serving God. Now, what does this have to do with individuals? This sounds just like another sort of copy and paste, that everybody flows through the same goal hierarchy. So I present to you a fascinating source from the book Torah Study by Yehuda Levy. And in discussing this specific mission of Torah, Avodah, Gemilus Chasadim, he says two things that are very powerful that have to do with the way we view Torah and mitzvos in general, and can be then adapted to our own personalized goal hierarchies. And that is that what I've called at the top here, flexible and adaptable goals. And he says here, in terms of time and place, the agadic mitzvos, specifically the matters which have no measure, they have no measure, include the three things on which the world stands: Torah, divine service, and acts of kindness, Torah, Avodah, Gemilus Chasadim, the Mishnah we're referencing. Hence, assigning priorities to agadic mitzvos may have a greater influence in our way of life than do the halachic decisions. Here we are dealing with the very foundation of the world, yet defined halacha does not provide detailed guidance. We must rely on our own reason, or that of our spiritual guides, and on the agados of the Talmud, Torah, and Midrashim for guidance. The parables of the sages teach us that priorities in these matters must be established according to the needs of the time and place. So Rabbi Levy is is arguing for us is that when it comes to halacha, halacha, although it does change and is adapted to certain points and certain circumstances, for the most part, it's pretty set in stone. It has to adapt to modernity in the sense that we have to apply the principles and place them to whatever new things are coming up in our lives. Agada is different. The concept of agada, of things that aren't halachic per se, character, how we view our the world, how we view our purpose, how our goals. Rabbi Levy's arguing is definitionally that's going to need to be adapted to the time and place. So when new things happen in the world, we have to take the values that we gain from Torah, Talmud, and Midrashim, and then adapt it and place it on whatever challenges we are confronted with, because every person and every, well, start with time and place, every place and every time has different challenges. And then he takes it one step further, and he says that the same is true when it comes to each person on the bottom of the slide. Moreover, our sages have suggested in the Agadah that the establishment of priorities in mitzvos depends on personal disposition and talents. Just as people differ in their personality traits, so too do they differ in their obligations regarding mitzvos. And he quotes a beautiful source about raindrops that has to do with this, but we're going to skip that for now. What he's basically arguing is that when it comes to Torah, Avodah de Gemilas Chasadim, and the way we have to actually practically apply the Torah principles in our lives, it does change based on the person. It does change based on the time and the place and what we're confronted with before us. So my argument for now is that what we all have to do is we have to take the set hierarchy of everything should be L'Shem Shemayim and Torah and Vodah Gemilas Chasadim, and then be able to adapt it to whatever situation and whatever personality we have. We have to individualize our goal hierarchy from a religious sense and put that and place that into our own lives and to what we're experiencing in the current moment. And I would argue that our goal hierarchy and what exactly what we were supposed to do might have been different a month ago than it is right now. And we have to be able to take the time to reflect and adapt our goal hierarchy based on our personality and based on the time and situation that we are in. I'm going to present to you homework, as it were, that the link here you can view on your own. There's a great resource from the website positivepsychology.com where they go through a really long list of practical ways to work on goals. We're not going to get into the details here and now. I'm just going to encourage all of us that I think it is a time to sit back and reflect on what are our current goals, adapt our goals to the current situation, all levels of our goals, the ultimate concern as well as the mid-level and lower level goals, and then to practically start working on accomplishing those goals and creating those goals so that we can use our growth mindset, our desire to adapt and to learn and to take challenges and conquer them and those long-term goals. In order to do that, we have to start actually practically working on them. So I encourage all of us to go, and I'm going to do this as well, go through these. This is the list of just the table of contents of the articles. What are life goals? Why should we set goals? Five examples, ideas for life goals, the process and steps of setting life goals, how to define and determine personal goals in life. So all of this is the starting point is how do I develop these goals? How do I think and brainstorm what my goals actually are? Healthy goal setting objectives and guidelines, planning life goals and how to prioritize them, worksheets to create and set life goals, how to track goals, 11 strategies, 3 apps that you can use, 6 books you can use, 17 quotes you can use. There's a lot of stuff here in terms of how to practically create goals that will help us and then be able to then work on those goals. So I encourage all of us to look at that, but we're going to transition now to the third part, which is the concept within grit. If you remember from a moment ago, one of Duckworth's part of her definition was that grit entailed strenuously working to overcome challenges, failures, despite adversities. So now we're going to talk about failures and we're going to talk about adversities and we're going to talk about challenges when it comes to how we set how we work towards these goals, even if we have a wonderful growth mindset. When we hit roadblocks, what are we supposed to do? How do we deal with pain? How do we deal with suffering? How do we deal with struggling? So there's a fascinating discussion that Duckworth has within her book, Grit, where she describes two different approaches from two different psychologists that she's encountered in her life. One is from Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, who wrote the book on the left here called Flow. And what Csikszentmihalyi basically argues, he's one of the founders of positive psychology. He worked before the movement started, but his work was adapted and brought into the positive psychology movement, where he basically argues that if somebody is in the zone, if they're working really hard, it's a positive experience. It's something that they enjoy. In contrast to that, Duckworth thought that it was almost a contradiction. The work of Anders Ericsson, some of you might be familiar with him from Malcolm Gladwell's books, where he talks about the secrets of expertise, the science of expertise, and the famous 10,000-hour rule. And that is that we can't become experts at anything unless we work at something for at least 10,000 hours. And the feel, the taste that you get from Ericsson's work is that becoming an expert, working really hard on something, is not pleasant. Flow from Csikszentmihalyi seems to argue that working really hard is a pleasant experience, and Ericsson seems to be arguing that working really hard is not a pleasant experience. It's very difficult. It's not something somebody would choose to do because it's something they enjoy. There's nothing enjoyable, as it were, about the experience of working hard. So Duckworth looked at these two paradigms of psychology researchers and wanted to know which one was correct. Is working really hard a pleasurable experience? Is it a painful experience? And she brought them together, and you could read the book. She describes how she created a debate between them. And by the end, she wasn't really sure what the answer was. She basically sums up almost with like an Elu type of answer, that there's truth and elements of truth to both of them. And I would argue, and the reason why I'm bringing this in, is that you find the same thing when it comes to Talmud Torah, that you find some sources that highlight and paint a picture of how beautiful and awesome and amazing and sweet and pleasurable the experience of Talmud Torah is. And then on the other hand, and this is what we're going to focus on for the moment, we have many sources that highlight the difficulty and the pain, the suffering involved with the learning of Torah. So if you look here, perhaps most famously, this is in the sixth parak of Pirkei Avos, a collection of brisos that was appended to the five chapters of Pirkei Avos, where it says here, Kachi darcha shel Torah. This is the way of the Torah. Pas b'melech tochal u'mayim b'meshura tishta. You shall eat bread with salt. You should just have a little bit of water. V'ala aretz tishan, sleep on the floor. V'chayet sa'ar tichya. You should live a life of pain. There's an active command, as it were, to live a life of pain if you want to live a life of Torah. How do we understand this? So if you look here in the source, the Yaivetz, Rabbi Yosef Yaivetz, who lived through the Spanish Inquisition, who was no stranger to pain and suffering, writes as follows, Kvar kasafti pa'amim rabos, ki lo yidrosh Hashem yisparach mimeni yudias ha-Torah. God doesn't want us to know things. What does that mean? He just wants us to know things based on our own ability. There's no test where we have to pass that test based on some pre-standard decision by some governmental agency of how much I should know. That's not what Torah is about. Torah is about trying, right? Try with difficulty to work hard towards something. Kilafum sara agorth, according to the pain do we get reward. Lo lafi alimud. It's not about knowing, it's about the effort. And for those, even though we didn't highlight, for those who are familiar with the mindset literature that we started off with, this is essential to growth mindset. Growth mindset is about praising effort, not about praising results or innate abilities. We praise people for the effort that they put in, the amel. not because they've accomplished. V'chein amru ashrei mi she'amal b'torah, praiseworthy is somebody who is amel, who works hard, who perseveres, who puts in the effort. It's not necessarily pleasurable. It's chaye tsa'ar tichya. It's a painful existence to work hard and learning Torah, but that's what's required of us. And then on the bottom, one of the 48 kinyanei Torah, 48 ways that we acquire Torah, is through Kabbalas Hayisurin, acceptance of suffering. Why is acceptance of suffering essential to Talmud Torah, to the learning of Torah? So the Perkei Moshe of Moshe Amos Nino, who lived right post the Spanish Inquisition, and a lot of his works relate to the growth process after the communities were destroyed and kicked out. So his works deal with the post-traumatic growth, as it were, where he writes the 24th thing in the list of 48 is Kabbalas HaYisurim, ki imya bilti soval HaYisurim. If we were not able to accept, if we were not able to tolerate pain and suffering, v'itzar v'yidug behem, and we would get so worried and so anxious and so occupied with difficulties, yatriduhu milimudo, we wouldn't be able to learn. And I would expand that it's not just about learn. We wouldn't be able to function. We wouldn't be able to work. We wouldn't be able to have relationships because we're just too absorbed in the pain and the suffering. V'lo yitzlach lakol, nobody would be successful at anything. Al kain, tsarech shelo yargish osam klal. It goes with an extreme formulation here. We should not feel that at all. I'm not sure that's the exact psychologically healthy way to relate to it for everybody, but he argues that try not to feel the pain at all. Be a kablam b'sever panim yapos. Accept the pain with some level of contentment. Ad yiskayim tamuda biyado, and then you'll be able to learn, you'll be able to focus. Ki akar she'es shalom b'torah yismach b'hem, and then you'll be able to look back and see and be happy with what you were able to accomplish, even during the times of suffering, even during the times of pain. She'yakir ma'alasim b'to'alasim, you'll see the benefits of persevering and putting in the hard work. So it's essential for our own flourishing and our own way to grow through these circumstances, to be able to tolerate pain and suffering and not have it weigh us down to the point where we can't accomplish. And just bringing it home with one last slide, the Mishnah tells us, this is the last Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. As I mentioned before, the sixth chapter of Pirkei Avos is a collection of brisos that was added later. There are five prakim of Mishnayos originally within Pirkei Avos. And the last of that Mishnah, the last Mishnah in Pirkei Avos is Ben-Hehe Omer Lefun Sara Agra. Ben-Hehe said, according to the labor is the reward. Rabbeinu Yonah tells us, Lefisha Lamala Harbe Lahazir Alimura Torah, Vigam Zikna Veseva, Vafilushi Star Harbe, Vimateshas Kochel Shal Adam. Even though learning, living a life of Torah is difficult, it's hard, it's something that causes a lot of pain to be able to be committed to a religious life, still, we should not move away from it. Minalo Yazuzba. So now, Bar-Hehe comes now and says, I want to comfort you. Living a life of pain is what Torah is all about. It's what a religious life is all about. What's the comfort? L'dabar alibo, to speak to their hearts. Kilo yachlosh arov tzaro shitzdarbo. Don't pay attention to all that pain and suffering. There is pain and suffering, but don't pay attention to it. Why? Ki lefum sara agra. Because we get reward according to that pain. The suffering helps lead towards more reward. The Rambam says it even stronger in the next source. V'amar ben Hehe, lefi shir amalecha batora yescharecha. The amount that you put, the hard work you put in, that's the reward you get in. It's based on the effort. It's based on the hard work. And he says, very strong formulation here. You will not accomplish unless you work hard, unless you toil. If we're just learning when it's easy and we're learning and relaxed while we're learning, it's not going to work. It's no point to it, because the only way to learn, the only way to grow is through pain, is through suffering, is through difficulty. And then we'll leave off with a comforting note from the Me'am Lo'ez. So the Me'am Lo'ez writes as follows. So if you, again, this is the last Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Why do we end with this Mishnah? It's giving us strength. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, by putting this in the last Mishnah, is giving us strength that we don't give up hope. Shelo nipol beruchenu. Achare shekaranu es kol advar ma'elu atovim me'itanu. Hata'amsis ha'nefesh v'aboda ruchanis kasha. Everything we just read for the first previous chapters, the five chapters, is difficult. It's hard. You're telling me that I got to work so hard to accomplish? It's difficult. That's why it brings, according to the pain, is the reward. According to the effort and the difficulty and the pressure that we go through, that's where the reward comes from. And that's the reward in this world and in the next world. And I think that's an important way to end. This is not just talking about reward in the next world. This is reward in this world. In order for us to grow as people, it requires us to, when we are confronted with challenges, again, we hope we don't have challenges on some level, but the other frame of that is that, the other way to spin that is that if we're not confronted with challenges, we're not going to be able to grow. And I think that, unfortunately, we are confronted with a challenge at this point. And the question is, what are we going to do when confronted with this challenge? And everybody has their own set of challenges, some more than others during this difficult time. But are we going to look at these challenges with a growth mindset and be able to say, I'm going to try, I'm going to learn, I'm going to move towards accomplishing? Are we going to create goals for ourselves that are going to help ground us and move us forward and be able to grow from the experience? And when we have difficulty accomplishing those goals, because there's nothing that's going to be easy now, everything's going to be difficult, are we going to persevere? Are we going to have grit? Are we going to tell ourselves and remind ourselves that, yes, there is pain, there is suffering right now. I'm getting rewarded for that suffering in the next world, and I'm also getting rewarded for that suffering in this world, because I'm going to grow from these experiences. I'm going to become a better person because of these experiences. But the only way to do that is to be mindful, is to remember that we could grow, and to create goals and try to accomplish those goals and persevere as much as we can towards accomplishing those goals. If we can do that, then hopefully we can flourish, and hopefully we can adapt, and we can, even though we're all going through our suffering and travails, that we can all hopefully grow as individuals, grow together as a community, and as Klal Yisrael and the entire world together, to come out of this with more success. We're going to open it up to questions. I in the last slide here, I have resources for you. If you want to follow my work, where I generally combine psychology and Torah elements together, you could subscribe on my website, psychfortorah.com. You could follow me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all the social media, unless there's a new one that I'm not aware of. As well as in this last slide, I gave you some more resources from the psychological literature that you can click on and work on, either with yourselves, with your children, with your parents, anybody. These are very helpful resources to look through. Any questions?
Earlier in the session, do you find a lot of older people have mixed mindset? Like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
It's an interesting question. There's actually a mission in Pirkei Avos that deals with this as well, that says that young children are like, you know, when you write on their, you know, the metaphor is that when you teach them, it's easy to write, it's easy, you know, to imprint. But for old people to learn new things, it's much more difficult, because their brains are more fixed. Now, there's little question that might be true. The more our neurons have basically solidified their pathways, the harder it is to change. Yet, that does not mean we can't change. And what's interesting about the discussions about growth mindset is that you have to separate the growth mindset from actually changing, meaning that there are things that we can't change. There are parts of our personalities that might not be able to be changed. Let's put it that way. There might be parts of our intelligence that we might not be able to change. I might have a learning disability. There might be some chemical imbalance in my brain that might make it incredibly difficult for me to completely overturn or change a habit that I have. So I'm not arguing that we can, if we just put our mind to it, we can do whatever we want and we can become whoever we want. We all have temperaments. We all have genes. We all have some limitation on our ability to adapt to anything. Yet, What the idea here is that if I assume, I don't know what exactly those things are, right? I don't know what I can change and what I can't change completely. If I assume that things that if I assume I can't change it, if that's my fixed mindset, I can't change it, then I won't even try and I won't grow it. I won't have any opportunity to grow. If I have a growth mindset, then I can work on it. Does that mean I will automatically be able to change everything? No. There might be things I can't change, but I can work on it. I can make inroads. I can make slight changes. Maybe it takes more effort if I'm older and those neural pathways are stronger, and it requires me more effort and more effort and more effort to try to change those pathways and learn new habits and learn new tricks. Yes, it might take more. So to answer your question, again, briefly, is that it is harder for older people because they are more solidified in their habits, but that doesn't mean that they can't change. I don't know if we can change everything, but without thinking that I can change, I won't try. And by trying and trying hard and persevering, I might be able to change that thing that I thought I can't change. Next. Should I be doing this from the chat?
How should I be doing this? Here is from Moshe. I've been looking in both the questions and answers and also in the chat. But the next question that we have to use, should ignore our hardships and just go on?
No. Do not ignore hardships. I think it would be impossible to ignore our hardships. We have hardships. There's no way to get around hardships in the sense that the world, everybody here is dealing with something difficult and to ignore them and to say my life has not been changed is wrong. The question is, how do we adapt? How do we, I would say, reconfigure what our goals are within the parameters of our reality at this point in time? So we're not ignoring hardships, but we don't want those hardships to stop us from growing. That growing might change. We might have to adapt our second level goal now because our situation changed. I might have to lower my expectations of how much I could accomplish in my day if my children are at home and I have to help them learn as well. There's no question that we have to adapt. So our goal, the idea here is that our goals should change based on our situation, assuming that they are still aligned with our broader long-term goals and that we can adapt to whatever, you know, effectively what we're dealing with. So I don't think that I would say that we should ignore our hardships. Adapt to our hardship, yes. Anybody else?
We have time for one final question. Is it here? If I don't feel my life change now, am I missing something?
If I don't feel my life changed now, am I missing something? No. You know, I guess in theory, your life didn't have to change. I would assume most people's lives changed. If yours didn't for whatever reason, I'm sure there's a, you know, could be a possible good explanation for that. But I think for most people, they're dealing with a slight new reality over the past week or two. You know, I'd be happy to talk to you individually to see what's going on. If you are missing something, it doesn't have to be that you're missing something. It doesn't have to be. Okay.
If there are any additional questions, hopefully we can connect any of our attendees with if they have questions for one-on-one follow-up. And if it's okay with you, to send out the slides so that people can refer back to them.
Sure, I will email them to you now. They are there for you.
And we will send out the recording. I'm sorry. Okay, so we'll plan to send out the recording for this webinar the next. If you have anything else to add, please feel free. Otherwise, we thank you very much for your time and for sharing this message with us.
Thank you. I'm putting my email address in the chat box. And the my website, if you want to go to Psych for Torah, you could connect through there too.
Wonderful. We'll send all of this out in email. Thank you so, so much. We really appreciate you being here with us. We appreciate all of you tuning in. Everybody stay safe, stay healthy, and please continue joining for our webinar for the week. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you.